Good evening and welcome all of you beloveds this evening. Once again, the Christ candle has been lit as a symbol of the Christ light that is within us and within all reality, calling to us and beckoning to us to yield ourselves and to be reborn as the new for ourselves, for one another, and those close to us, and in fact, all creation. So we'll begin our time by honoring someone that on this day, July 23rd, not so very many years ago, there was born someone who is very close to us and very dear to us, and we celebrate his life today. And that is Peter Haas. Today is Peter's birthday, and he is flying today to Wisconsin to spend time with his family in celebration. So our opening reflection is taken from his article that he wrote in the January issue of The Mark. I went back to read it really to just see where we began. Here we are 6 months later for when that article appeared. And that time seems almost like a time of innocence now. And yet the same call, the same possibility that existed in January as we were looking over the threshold of the new year exists today as well. So these are just a few sentences from his article. The new year is an ideal moment in time to let the jar crack a bit more. A sacred time to look at the patterns and practices that shape and contain our life. Are we chasing reflections of self, of power, of security, affection? Is our spiritual hunger being misplaced, leaking, flat, resistant to the water of transformation? Let's aim alone and together to follow the way to source, to be raised up the great ray of creation from one way of being to the next, to move deeper into reality. The way is the font of conscious influences. Seated among us, let us receive these influences into fuller wisdom, joy, and love. And so it is. So we give thanks for the life and being of Peter Haas. Happy birthday, Peter. May it be a joyful time for you. I'd like to highlight a notice in today's email about an upcoming new opportunity. Next week, there will be two open forums to meet in a smaller group setting with the Journey School faculty. In an unstructured time, really, to ask any questions about the homework, perhaps, or any aspect of the school or sharing or conversation that you might like to pursue in a more intimate setting. Perhaps you're new to this work and haven't found quite the forum in which to express your questions. So this is really an unstructured time to just come and have a conversation. And there will be two opportunities to do so. One on Tuesday from 11 to 11:45 Central Daylight Time, and one on Saturday from 10 to 10:45. So I invite you to consider that for more details. And the Zoom information, you can check today's email. So let us now once again prepare ourselves to listen deeply and move into our inmost being to receive knowledge, and then to have our emotional center enliven with valuation for what we're receiving, for these conscious influences that have been seated actually throughout all humanity, but have somehow mysteriously and wondrously found their way to us at this particular time. Have them come to us without intermediary, as if they were spoken directly to us and about our particular lives at this moment. So with feet on the floor and back upright, strong back, a back that has carried us through life, us, and a heart that is open, tender, soft, expansive. We breathe in deeply and hold just for a moment the awareness of the preciousness of the gift of life and the new life that is being breathed in me every moment. Then we breathe out this valuation, this healing goodness into the world. We hand over the complexities of the day, knowing that they are gifts, that they are not beyond our capacities. We hand over the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they will be addressed when they will be addressed. We hand over the anxieties and small fears of our hearts, knowing that they are known. We lay down our lives as we construct them, knowing that we can pick them up. No one takes my life from me. I lay it down. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. I am totally present now. I will share our reading on the screen. And it will be read 3 times with a silent pause in between each reading. Anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will not enter it. To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Just to live a moral, well-ordered life is not enough. How I live in this moment, therefore, makes a difference to my eternal existence, to the final definition of my life, and what my life means for the world. Since the final decision of my life in this moment is my irreversible contribution to the world. Anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will not enter it. To see a world in a grain of sand and to heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Just to live a moral, well-ordered life is not enough. How I live in this moment, therefore, makes a difference to my eternal existence, to the final definition of my life, and what my life means for the world. Since the final decision of my life in this moment is my irreversible contribution to the world. Anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will not enter it. To see a world in a grain of sand and to heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Just to live a moral, well-ordered life is not enough. How I live in this moment, therefore, makes a difference to my eternal existence, to the final definition of my life, and what my life means for the world. Since the final decision of my life in this moment is my irreversible contribution to the world. And so it is. You're now invited to share what you received from this passage and its reading. Yes, Lisa, please.
What I heard in listening to the last paragraph is that your being draws your life. And it's very clear to me in times when I'm coming from a violent place, I'm coming from negative parts of centers, that life responds to me in that way and just about immediately. And if I'm conscious enough, I can see that and have a shock and move out of that. So those words are very beautiful. The irreversible can be a bit of a stinging word of realizing the enormity of every moment and every action and why it's very important to do the work.
Yes, truly, Lisa. Thank you. Thank you for that. Howard, please.
So, yes, that was a similar for me, what Lisa talked about, and especially my irreversible contribution to the world. And that's just it. Whatever it is I do is going to be that contribution, whether it's something that's mindful or conscious or it's totally unconscious and not... not thought out or not being mindful at all. And so it occurred to me, and I, some time ago in a class, I can't remember, it may have been Deborah Hale that talked about obligation. And that came up for me about my contribution to the world. It is an obligation to contribute in a way that, you know, the future is remembered, whatever it is that I can contribute will, you know, it'll be valuable, it'll be worthwhile, it'll be something that, you know, will contribute to the world as well as contribute to the future. So I feel like, you know, just from that last sentence that is really, you know, I have an obligation, responsibility to contribute something of value. So that's really a wish for me too.
Yes. Yes. May it be so. Thank you, Howard. Thank you. Chuck, please.
Yeah, like Lisa and Howard, I heard irreversible contribution to the world and how important each moment is just to be present and aware of you know, observing everything that happens in this moment, and to not identify with those eyes that come up.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you. Whitney, please.
The thing that really stood out to me this morning when I opened up the email was the picture, and it reminded me of a dream I had over 10 years ago. I was in a transitional period and feeling uneasy. And the dream was just that I was in a particular shape. And I could see another shape in my vision. And as soon as I looked into that shape, I morphed into it. And then that kept happening to me. I would change into a shape. And then I would see the shape and I would investigate and I would become that shape. And it happened to me several times in the dream. And that to me stood out, or at least was connected with the seeing with the eyes of a child. And being able to let something simple take you into something as vast as eternity. And that makes me think I overcomplicate a lot of things in my life and make them into bigger things than they need to be in. So just seeing with the eyes of a child and the world in a grain of sand.
Thank you so much, Whitney. Thank you. Paco, please.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
This with the image really struck me. The word that keeps coming to mind is awe. And having the cross be a lens through which to look at the world creates a sense of awe. And I think for me, it relates to the idea of self-remembering. So when I recognize the beauty, even in the most minuscule piece of nature in my backyard, I don't need a 1,000-mile view ahead of me. It's enough just to enjoy a blade of grass and to be in awe of that. And just to recognize that even the small things around us are a manifestation of the divine.
Yes. Thank you, Paco. Kathy, please.
What struck me is very similar to what I've been hearing. So it's about the value, the importance of each moment. And the quote from Luke and the poem from William Blake sort of gave me a sense of the quality that I think the moments should be and where they stir us in our emotional center. Mm-hmm. So as a little child makes me aware of the importance of having each moment be wonderful, because children just embrace everything in the moment as full of wonder. And then the words of William Blake were just a beautiful way of describing the indescribable and just how miraculous every moment is, how miraculous life is, how incredible the human species is, this planet that we're on. These things are a way to point us in the direction of reverence, and that word really stood out to me in today's reading.
Yes. Thank you so much, Kathy. Esther, please.
Hi, everyone. What stood out for me was that I think what Chuck and Howard said earlier I'm going to echo that. And is that consciously fulfilling the obligation? I guess I mean more like, what is thy will for me, the capital will for me? And I have been asking that question in a more serious manner, but I need some bravery to go with that, because I'm, you know, like, what is it going to be? Mm. But last night, this morning, I think, I had a dream where, I don't know if it was dream or what it was, but the light shone in my body and message was that because I like to draw and paint and send it to people for birthdays and whatnot and share with others, that that is my gift to bring this higher energy from the source. So I don't have to seek something grandiose that I don't know anything about, but start from where I am happy to do. So that is it. So
that's it. That's it, Esther. Thank you so much. Thank you for that joy. Thank you. Well, dear ones, all of that cheering was enlivening for our being. And thank you for sharing and for all of the thoughts of your hearts, both those that were shared and those who are that were held very close within. We can feel them. So in our continuing study of humanity with our unlimited capacities, we now move to the foods of life and how to digest them. So I'm very pleased to introduce Lori Raymond, who will take us on this journey of discovery. Lori.
Thank you, Marianne, and thank you, everyone, for your sharing. It was very beautiful and very relevant. I almost feel as if there's nothing more to say about this topic, but we will start with our homework from last week, and it touches what some of you have said about obligation. Our lives are required for something. And we spoke about conscious labor and intentional suffering. Just as a bit of a review, conscious labor and intentional suffering are two distinct states and actions that often work synergistically. They manifest as self-love diminishes the concern with me and mine. And they are fruits and graces from our prayer and our work. So that's interesting. It's not something we can try to do. It arises in us as a gift. And yet we see that oftentimes it engenders more prayer and inspires more work. We cannot do this in isolation. We need each other in conscious labor and intentional suffering. And we do this, it can be recognized as we are working without regard to results or with non-identification. So the homework was to choose one area of your life to practice conscious labor or intentional suffering, non-critically observe patterns of useless suffering, non-identify, and self-remember. And it was recommended to practice the welcoming prayer, which is a very wonderful three-centered embodied way of digesting useless and intentional suffering, really all suffering. So I look forward to your sharing. Just a reminder that we're being conscious in our sharing of brevity and sharing without story, and courage and vulnerability, and self-remembering in all three centers. And we're not only doing that when we share, but when others share as well. So who would like to share their experiences? And you're giving us all opportunity for conscious labor and intentional suffering. Beth, please. Thank you.
Unmute.
Here you go.
Okay. When I really liked, I've loved the email from last week, and I have thought a lot about suffering. And the work says all that we're asked to do is to sacrifice our suffering. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about sacrifice, and because I've thought about that so frequently in the past, I just thought it would be such a full, wholehearted experience this week, and I got nothing when I was thinking about suffering. When I personalized the suffering, it was when I tried to apply the suffering to my suffering, it was like fretting about a hangnail when I see everything else that's happening in the world. And so I read the email again, and I thought, conscious labor. Mm. That's where I need to focus. And so I focused on conscious labor, and it just brought such a full days. You know, as I had appointments, I would remember before I did the Zoom to be conscious, to really be present with this person who was sharing. And a lot of my life is on my own. My husband and I in the house, and so. There's not a lot that I rub up against anymore. Mm-hmm. But to be conscious as I cook, to be conscious as I do a jigsaw puzzle, to be conscious as I'm doing emails was really something that that brought fullness to my heart. And in regard to suffering, there was a period in my life about 15 years ago when there was a lot of family drama, and it's been gone for quite a while, or so I thought. But I was having vivid dreams every night that brought back that suffering that I was no longer aware of. And I would wake up several times a night and I would recall it would be, you know, twisted family stuff. And it occurred on my sister's birthday. And I was so grateful that I could be aware of that and let it go and then go celebrate her birthday in her backyard with her and just feel the total love that is there.
Yes.
So thank you for the week.
That's beautiful, Beth. I've been preparing to lead the forgiveness retreat. And one of the things that we learn in that is that it's a process and the issues are in the tissues. And just because we think it's all resolved out there doesn't mean that it's been fully released within. And you have illustrated that. And through your work of just self-observing, non-identifying, and self-remembering, you were able to take steps forward in that process of fully forgiving. So I'm grateful for you illustrating that. Thank you. Rebecca, please.
You're unmuted, Rebecca. Go ahead.
I was hoping, it was a very full week for me, and I was hoping that it would be full of conscious labor and conscious suffering, but it appears that the work came to meet me in the arena of useless suffering, which of course is valuable in its own right. There were two experiences. One was that I got a migraine headache, which I get not that often, a couple of times a year. And I really tried to bring the welcoming prayer to that situation, with not so much success. It was good to practice, but I couldn't make the leap. I couldn't make the leap to welcoming it. The fuller experience that I had was one evening when I had an event that triggered what for me is one of my nemesis eyes, which is the green with envy, jealousy eye. And as I lay in bed being tortured by my thoughts and my imagination, and, you know, at night it appears you can start in one subject, and then you've got a whole bunch of subjects that have all come to, you know, to torture you at one time. And I went, well, okay, so lying in bed not sleeping isn't helping. Let's think about the work. I thought, okay, the first thing I need to do is change center. My intellectual center was just out of control. So I got up and went to a quiet spot in the house, and which at, you know, midnight wasn't that hard to find. And just went into the silence and just brought several, you know, it was bringing my focus from my overactive imaginative brain down into my heart. That was the first move. And then other tools that I brought were to focus love on the person who without any intention on their part had triggered this emotion in me. And that was not hard to do. I'm very fond of this person. And then to simply, and I just let, and then it was like the instruction about if you can't if you can't
help it,
overcome it, will it, you know, just, and it was like, I'm just gonna have to suffer through this, you know, just keep moving my parts until I get to the other end of this particular cesspool that I have allowed myself to get into. And that in the end was what did it for me, you know, and mm-hmm. It's this, and I also bore in mind the instruction to observe myself uncritically, which is difficult in this situation because, you know, you go, oh, I have to do this again. I just can't believe it. But there you go. And the tools come more readily, and the trip across the cesspool is a little shorter, and it's valuable.
Yes. So. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that, Rebecca. And that is probably not an uncommon experience for us to be sort of awash in a tsunami of negativity, different thoughts and feelings, bodily sensations. And your sharing illustrated that we, for one thing, we have a lot of tools, and which is a wonderful thing, and just making the effort to keep jumping for whatever we can, to keep asking for help, to keep reaching for a work idea, to keep wishing to non-critically self-observe and non-identify and self-remember, and feeling down into the body. And if I could piggyback a little bit on what you shared, I really appreciate your sharing, because I had an experience this week that was the same. Sometimes this happens in the middle of the night to me. It's almost like the Holy Spirit wakes us up when we're asleep and says, okay, it's time to work. And, you're quiet enough to where we maybe have a chance with you, to dig up some things that, you get to get free of. And other times though, it happens, there might be an impression that comes in during the day that, and that's what happened with me. I got an email that before I could even take a breath, I was swamped with so much. Spoke to my professional life, and before I could move, I was swamped with the programs for happiness, power and control, affection and esteem, survival and security. It was all there. And so moving away from the thoughts and into the body, the welcoming prayer is known as consent on the go, and it's really useful for that. But this was kind of like an extended welcoming prayer. It was like, and I read about this. David Hawkins actually talks about this, and where you just kind of keep moving into and into and into with non-identification, the next thing, and it might move to different parts of your body. And the thoughts just keep returning, like in centering prayer, just keep returning to the body. And I knew that I was not going to be able to do any work or do, it had to be gone through. It was its time. And I've gotten to be grateful for those things, because I know that these opportunities don't come around all the time, and I want to be healed. And I think about Father Keating talking about sometimes you just need a good spiritual vomit, and the vomit is not comfortable. It's a healing crisis, really. If you've ever been to a naturopath and they talk about healing crisis, it's feels like it's getting worse before it gets better. And it's just the way the body works through the toxins and releases the toxins. So thank you for sharing that with non-identification. We learn as work students that, you know, somebody once said, you know, when you're trying to get the soap out of a bottle, how long does it take with the water flowing in there? And the answer is as long as it takes. And so it requires patience on our part, and it requires a faith in God that the divine therapist is bringing in, bringing up everything that needs to be handled in the right and perfect time. And so I appreciate your work and you're willing to share about your work. Thank you. Anyone else? Did all the hands go down? No. Cynthia Hart, please. And then Rachel.
Hi.
Hi.
I had an experience that relates to intentional suffering and conscious labor. So one day, for some reason, I felt really sad all day. And I was observing it, but there was no reason for it. I couldn't figure it out, but I didn't attach to it, but it was there. And then I got a phone call, and this person unexpectedly told me some very difficult news to take in. And we had been waiting for some good news to come, but it turned out that it was kind of devastating news. And when I heard it, I've been working with suffering for a while, along kind of the same line. And when the news came in, you know, I was sympathetic and I was comforting to the person I was talking to. And when I hung up, I knew that I didn't want to go into useless suffering because I've done that enough. And so I didn't know what to do with my body. And so I went upstairs and just lay down and just started feeling it. And my body got really quiet. And then I could feel physically, you know, the intensity of the suffering. But there was no story. There was no thoughts in my mind. There was just, this is what I feel. And I remember then a thought popped in my mind, and I thought of, you know, there are many, many, many women that are experiencing the same feeling. And then the wave of kind of holding that suffering and feeling that came back to me. And that was with me for a long time. And I just watched it and observed it and felt compassion for the situation that exists in our world in regards to this kind of suffering for women in general. And then when I got off the phone, I mean, when I got up from it, it dissipated. After a while, it dissipated. It was no more. And so I could have gone downstairs and chatted with my husband about it and gone into like a horizontal about it, about the story, about what happened. But something in me decided to just hold it, just like I'd held it upstairs. And I had nothing to say. I didn't tell him, even though it was news that at one point I would have to share with him. But I didn't. I didn't say anything. And that happened for 2 or 3 days. I had nothing to say. I just held it. And I also was not experiencing the old patterns of self-concern, or personal concern. I consciously, each time it came to me, reached out for something higher, knowing that this was something I don't understand it. I may never understand it. I can't call it unjust anymore. I can't call it anything. I can just say it's there and let me feel it. Let me hold it. Let me have compassion for the myriad of people that are experiencing this and keep it in prayer. And somehow I looked outside and I could see, you know, all the light reflecting off of all nature, knowing that God is in that. And I thought, I know that God is in all that. So I know he's in this. He is in all of it. It is all unfolding in some beautiful way. And this is a moment of just holding the difficult spot. And since then, I haven't really, I still feel the same way. There's ramifications for me that I carry in regards to this news, and I'm just carrying it. It's just the next thing to do and another duty to do, and I'm trying to do it with delight. And I do, actually, I am doing it with delight, so that's it.
Thank you, Cynthia. That's such a beautiful description of conscious labor and intentional suffering and discernment of when you needed, when you might be tempted to, as you said, go horizontal or to allow another eye to pick up the microphone and to just know for yourself that you needed to hold it. And for your your husband, the rest of your family, that you needed to just hold it. And I also heard your willingness to feel the feeling without identification. And we sometimes don't realize that that's possible, that we can non-identify with self-remembering as we are fully feeling the sensations and the feelings in the body. So thank you for that beautiful description and also that illustration of how each of our work serves all. That you did that for all of those women who perhaps don't have the tools or the time or ability to do that, that our conscious suffering serves the all. So thank you so much for your sharing about that. I think it was Rachel and then Tracy. These will probably have to be short.
Hi,
Rachel.
Okay, just making sure I can put words to this experience because it feels pretty vulnerable to share, but I'm gonna go for it. Through this work, I've realized that I haven't, without being very intentional about it, I haven't really lived in my body, like my day-to-day life. But I know through centering prayer what it is to be in my body and feel more open. Specifically for me has been, I've really noticed that when I'm not living in my body, there's like a constriction that's happening in my abdomen, like a clenching, feels almost like someone's doing this. But when I'm intentional about being in my body, in centering prayer, I can open that up. So my work has been opening that up as I'm living. And it's been extraordinary to be in my body in that way with that kind of intention. It has been whenever I feel myself move into a mechanical way of being, grabbing a cup of coffee in the afternoon to just keep going. Last week I had this happen where I was going for a cup of coffee, to not be in my body. And I was going to pour it And I heard something in me say, something needs to happen here. And so I set down the cup of coffee and I didn't know what it was and I wasn't concerned about it, about figuring out what it is, what emotion I was feeling. I kind of plopped down on my staircase and just had the most uncomfortable release of, I don't know what. just something that needed to be released. And by the same token, by opening up this clenched stomach, and then there's also just being so purely in the moment and in touch with that innocence and childlike wonder in my life, which is wonderful to have. It's just been a really difficult thing, but something that I know intuitively, like I've been wanting to do. I just haven't placed the intention, and I'm just grateful for these classes to be able to practice that and kind of do it with you guys throughout the week and then be able to come back and share it. Because, you know, I haven't really talked about it anywhere else, and it's just nice to put words on it, and I'm hoping to continue to do it and just see where it takes me, but it's really wonderful and hard.
It is wonderful and hard. Thank you so much, Rachel, for your vulnerability and your courage. And bless you, and may your work continue to yield further opening, and may it be so for all of us. Thank you. Tracy Stevens, I'm going to put you on hold with the hope that maybe you can share a little bit later, and we're going to move on into the teaching portion of this evening. So I will share. I'm going to move down from there to Food of Impressions. And there's that beautiful image by one of our community, by the way. And so what I'm going to do is just go through some major points of the email. And then I'm going to go through these pretty quickly because they are in the email. And by the way, I heard that some people are attending class and they're not getting the email. So if you're not getting the email and you wish to get the email, please call the office and they will put you on the list. And we appreciate so much your presence and want you to be able to get all of the benefit. So Food of Impressions. So to recap, our surrendered will to God yields capacity to participate in conscious labor and intentional suffering. So that grows, and we're more and more able to do what Rachel was describing. Conscious labor and intentional suffering, in turn, inspire continued ora et labora, prayer and work. Perhaps the greatest energetic treasure in the field of our work comes from the understanding of how to digest the food of impressions. So this week we just kind of get down into it. What is the food of impressions? So along with the other two foods, the food that we eat and the air that we breathe, impressions also provide energy for life. They are what we see, read, touch, hear, smell outwardly. They are what we think, feel, and sense bodily inwardly. And we also receive impressions from real eye and higher centers, which are always transmitting, but due to interference in our state of being, we are often unable to hear them. we're born with the capacity to digest the first two foods, the food that we eat and the breath that we breathe. In other words, our bodies can, from the time we're born, transform them into substances of higher energetic level to nourish and sustain us. But as we are, the food of impressions doesn't transform into something higher. As self-developing organisms, we develop the means of digesting the food of impressions. What does this mean? So as we are asleep, we don't really take in very much in our surroundings. We don't have eyes to hear or ears, the eyes to see or ears to hear. So we really see or think we see the same thing over and over, the same houses, the same people, the same house that we live in, the same pots and pans, everything. So we don't take in very much of our surroundings. As we are also, the way we take in these impressions or our perceptions of them is mechanical, limited, and just plain wrong. We confuse our perceptions of life, our habits of mind, feeling, and body, which the work calls associations, with life itself. Nichols says, we take our typical reactions to impressions as life. We take our reactions to a person as him or her. Life is our impression of it, and these can be transformed. Life is our impressions of it, and these can be transformed. And I remember Tim sitting in front of a group of us one time saying, you don't really see me. You're not seeing me. You're seeing your idea of me. That is an impression that you have created, maybe from the first couple of times you saw me. And that's who I am to you from now on. And so we have the extraordinary opportunity to transform and digest these impressions and see in a new way. So how do we do this? The work gives us the great opportunity of applying first conscious shock. And it's a way of saying it's the conscious effort to receive impressions in a new way. It's so the practice of self-remembering that leads to the state of self-remembering. So by practicing self-remembering at the point of impressions over and over and over and over again, this can lead to the state of self-remembering that we can live in all the time. First conscious shock is the energetic spark that ignites the alchemical transformation of the way we take life and hence our very way of being. And here it is again. Just to live a moral, well-ordered life is not enough. We need consciously to fulfill the obligation to produce the special energies that are required of us. That is a mysterious thing that Bennett said. It was in last week's email and again in this week's email. And so this is the how-to. So what is meant by special energies? Every substance, every thought, every impression that we see, hear, or read has an energetic level. In the work, these energetic levels are referred to as hydrogens. It's sort of a shorthand. And in general, there's a number after it. And the higher the energetic level, the lower the number. So I don't want us to get super caught up in these, but these are diagrams that are in the commentaries. Diagram of mechanical man on top. Diagram of man remembering himself on the bottom. So I'm going to make a quick pitch here for diagrams. When we can take in the diagrams that are in the commentaries, in a new way. They themselves are an impression. When we can take them in with a sense of wonder and wondering, with the childlike sense, we know that that the emotional center receives information in pictures, not in words. And so it's really useful to engage with these diagrams that are in the commentaries, to just try them on and wonder about what they actually mean to me, and even pray that prayer. I wonder, God, what is this telling me about myself? So you'll see in the diagram of a man asleep that here are the impressions coming in the top story of our house as hydrogen 48, level 48. And in our normal, sleepy, mechanical way of being, they're stopped. That's as far as they go. So they're entering into the outer parts of centers, and they're just staying there in the outer parts of centers. Nothing is being transformed. Nothing is useful for our transformation. These diagrams also show the air octave and the food octave. And the reason I wanted to show these particular ones is so you can see that these things all work together. And I think you can verify for yourself that your state of mind, your psychological state of mind, has an effect on your digestion, for example, how you take in food and how you breathe. We might experience, if we are in a negative state of mind, we might experience tightness in our chest. And so just the act of relaxing our bodies and consciously taking a deep breath. That was one of the things that was listed in the email, to drop down into the body and practice conscious relaxation and conscious breathing. That can have an effect on how we take in impressions, just like how we take in impressions can have an effect on our breathing and our digestion, which of course affects our well-being. And so going down, here is the diagram of man remembering himself. So here is the impression coming in at level 48. First conscious shock is being introduced right at the point of impressions. And we see that the impression is transformed into the possibility of higher hydrogens, hydrogen 24 and hydrogen 12, which are useful for us, which are the energy that we can use for our own transformation. And it turns out for the transformation of the all. So first conscious shock is the ferment or the catalyst or the energetic spark that transforms impressions. And so just to see how that works is, now these numbers are from the food diagram. So here is, I forget whether he's talking about an uncooked potato. Let's say he's talking about, so here at 768, here's an uncooked potato, which is really not very good for us to eat in that form. When the ferment of digestion is introduced, this is a higher level energetic ferment or catalyst at level 192 is introduced, it brings this food up to a higher level so that it becomes useful for our bodies to use. And so this is the same, exactly the same, with but we're the ones that introduce the ferment. We ask for first conscious shock. We make effort. The way was Rebecca was describing for us, all the different ways that we jump for the rope, that we use our tools, change centers, all the different ways that we can think of to introduce first conscious shock and transform that impression that's coming in from outside or inside. So what's the point? The point is that when we introduce something higher at the point of incoming impressions, it is transformed or digested into the energy needed for transformation into higher levels of being possible for all of us. This is from Jean de Salzman. And she says, in the ascending octave toward consciousness, remembering oneself is the shock that is necessary to pass the interval between me and Fa, first conscious shock. It brings a force that can only come from the wish, the will. And we certainly heard descriptions of people wishing and willing for transformation. We must make the will grow degree by degree, step by step. So we are growing will. And our will to God is the most powerful ferment that we can introduce in order to grow our will. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. So the bottom line, we have to confirm for ourselves that when we cleanse the lenses we see through, we see God's view of the world. I'm going to say that again. I'm offering this to confirm for yourself. When we cleanse the lenses we see through, we see God's view of the world. What is God's view of the world? Good and very good. We not only see God's view of the world, we begin to live in God's world. We are, and the world are, a new creation. And the aggregate of all of our views of the world creates the world. And so here's my little illustration. Many of you remember the illustration of dog ball theology. The dog ball is a way that Tim used to describe for us. The dog ball has all these protrusions on it, and the ball is one. It is all whole and one, and each of those protrusions are us, but we are all deeply rooted in the ground of our being. We are connected with one another and all creation and God. And there is no separation. The separation is a lie. So here's a new version of the dog ball. So here is a crystal.
Can you stop sharing, Lori, so we can see you?
Oh, yes. Thank you. So here is a crystal. We are all one. And if you think about each of us being one facet on this crystal, we each have a lens through which we're looking at the world. If we, through our work and prayer, begin to cleanse our lens, we can think of it being useful. It is useful for the all, for the future that we've been talking about. Another way to look at this is the lens of a movie projector. If the lens is dirty, the movie looks dirty. If we clean off the lens, the movie becomes bright and fresh and new. And so we are able to project God's view of the world that is always there and always good and very good out into the world. And as each of us do this, we actually create the world that is already there in God's eyes. So I will share our homework for this evening. Actually, we have a few minutes for your sharing. So would anybody like to share any comments or questions about any of that? It's a lot, and so perhaps this evening we can take this in as an impression or as a ferment, and as someone mentioned, hold it closely in our hearts for the possibility of it. So I'll go ahead and share our homework, and perhaps we will be leaving early tonight. From the email, every effort of attention to think in a new way, every three-centered wish for our highest potential, every jump for the rope to catch hold of a work idea, every fervent prayer for help, every turning of our attention toward impressions of beauty and truth, every willing surrender to God's will introduces in its own way first conscious shock. And there are many ways to practice this listed in the email. So our homework is to utilize one or more of the practices listed in the email to apply the transformational spark of first conscious shock to incoming impressions, whether inner or outer. And this is part of the email also that Marianne chose. So many synchronicities always. And so I think what I'd like to do is turn this into a prayer for us. So feeling our feet on the grounds and our breath in our nostrils, feeling down into our hearts, we pray. Oh God, Creator, we know that how we live in this moment makes a difference to our eternal existence, to the final definition of our lives, and what our lives mean for the world. Since the final decision of our lives in this moment is our irreversible contribution to the world. O God, may we know you and your vision of the world in each and every moment. May we serve you in each and every moment. Amen. I'm grateful to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori. Thank you. A closing word from Rodney Collin. To collect positiveness, we must love people, really love them, just love them. Everyone is in need of love. It is spiritual food. When we love people, we give them our flesh and blood. Blood is emanations. Flesh means our real self. To love is not an emotion, nor a sensation, nor an idea. It is the particular kind of radiation that only a certain type of action can produce in us. If a person feels affection for someone, but is too lazy to help them, he does not love them. On the other hand, a person may feel very irritated with someone, but in spite of his impatience, he makes an effort to help him. That is loving him. Love is the only power that can help, that can make help real. So let us go forth and give that spiritual food of love. And let us join together in praying the prayer of God's love for us. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake. Watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.